If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
So consistently, repeatedly doing the fundamentals over and over again. And the fundamentals aren't just, say, analyzing deals. The fundamentals are reaching out to your investors on a timely basis, right? So every 2 weeks, 1 week, whatever, 1 month, whatever your thing is, but frequent.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Omar Khan is the founder at Boardwalk Wealth, a leading private equity sponsor focused on acquiring value-add and opportunistic real estate across the Southeast. They currently have over 1,400 units under management. They also have a lower middle market platform with investments in consumer goods. Omar, welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going? Thank you for having me.
Hey, man, the pleasure's all mine. I mean, first of all, you know, I normally ask, where'd you start? Where are you now? And how'd you get there? But there's something else here in your profile that I'm super curious. I have no idea what it is. It says that you guys focus on QSRs. What is a QSR?
Quick service restaurant. That's the new politically correct way of saying fast food restaurants, my friend. you know, if you don't want people beating down your door, that's the new politically correct way of saying fast food restaurants or junk food, as we all like to say.
Excellent. Excellent. I'm a fan of all of it. So that's hilarious. All right, man. Hey, so the question I ask everybody, where'd you start? Where are you now? How did you get there?
Well, look, I started, my family's been in real estate I'm the third, fourth generation, I think. So kind of had that little bit of a family background going into it. Didn't necessarily ever think about being in real estate. I did the whole financing, worked on the corporate side, on the investment banking side, moved down to the US from Canada, 5-6 years ago for a girl. We're still married, thankfully. And, you know, by this time I moved down, I realized, thankfully, my wife was making good money. I was making good money. You know, we had a tax problem. Great problem to have, but nobody likes paying boatloads of money in their taxes. Had the professional network, had a personal sort of connection because of family, started doing deals, just put one step after the other and, you know, just went from there.
Right, right. How did you select multifamily as one of your asset classes?
Oh, it's the easiest way to get tax write-offs. I mean, the maximum amount of tax write-offs. I mean, I know people have inspiring stories about trying to uplift, you know, world hunger and solving all of that stuff. And I just had a very basic sort of issue. I just wanted to get a lot of tax write-offs without, you know, I don't know, building the next Facebook or something, which I was not going to do because I couldn't.
Right. Okay. Okay. So really you were attracted to real estate just simply from the tax write-off perspective.
Oh yeah. I mean, there's lots of other reasons, but the reason I got started was the tax write-offs. And, you know, after that, I've been lucky enough to meet so many interesting people just the nature of the work as such. So that's a very big added benefit, right? You get to meet such an interesting cast of people, especially as investors. So that's the thing that keeps you going, or at least keeps me going. But the reason why I started was the tax write-offs.
Right, right. Well, talk to us about that journey. What was that like, selecting your first deal? I mean, some people, it takes them a long time to get into their first opportunity. You seem like somebody that just goes out and just kind of does it. So talk to us about what it was like, you know, getting involved out of the gate for you.
Well, look, something that helped me along was that because I'd worked on the institutional side, so I had done deals. I mean, there were real estate deals, oil and gas deals, financial deals. Again, on the institutional side, very different beast, but at least I'd gone through that process, right? So for me, having gone through that process at a big company with lots of good mentors, teachers, and, you know, making those mistakes, that kind of helped me, propelled me when I was doing my own thing. Because, for instance, if I was 19 or 20, yeah, man, I would have like shot myself in the foot like so many times. I mean, I would probably be broke right now. Let's put it this way. So I had that going for me. So that's why when I was doing my deal, the first one, it was in San Antonio, two in San Antonio, one in Austin, then Jacksonville. It was a lot easier from the, hey, analysis is one thing, investment is one thing, and now you just got to go do the work thing, right? But again, that was purely because I had those professional experiences.
Right. How do you think investing or being an active investor is different from what you're doing now versus what it is on the institutional side? Like, how are things dramatically different?
Well, look, first of all, I don't have the ability to call on like trillions or whatever, billions of dollars, or an unlimited balance sheet, whatever you want to say. So frankly, that's the biggest thing. The other thing also is when you work in bigger companies, you have enough resources to do everything. So if you ever need a specialist for everything, everybody's on staff. So then it's like that, right? So that's obviously the big thing. The bad thing about it is that upside potential potentially is limited depending on what you do and all of that stuff, right? Or it's not as dramatic if you are more successful by yourself. So there's upside, there's downside. But the thing is, it's a great, the institutional side, I feel, is a great finishing school or a great training plus finishing schools for if you ever do want to go do your own deals. And what it also forces you to do is it develops a very good work ethic, because at least in finance, I know for a fact in law, because those are the two fields that I was more talking to people in, a lot of people, you need to have a really thick skin to survive, especially on the institutional side. Everybody's kind of like a type A sort of person. Nobody gives a shit about your feelings. And it's just go, 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 right? So you really, for me at least, the developing the work ethic, then realizing nobody really gives a shit about my feelings. You know, you just got to go do the work, because the work is whatever, what people judge you on or not judge. So learning and going through that process was the most important thing. And that's what really helped me, as opposed to, hey, knowing how to do financial modeling more, or, you know, having more money, some version of that.
Right, right. So when you stepped out on your own, what skills did you lack that you then had to kind of fill in the gaps on?
Oh, a lot of soft skills, basically. But again, when you're working on just the doing deals part, and say, for instance, I wasn't a managing director, so I wasn't responsible for relationships. They're developing the relationships. Now, everybody, I mean, unless you're completely on one side of the spectrum, everybody has those skills. But obviously, some people are a lot better at it. Some people are less better at it. I was somewhere in the middle that I wasn't bad at it, but I obviously need a lots of improvement, right? So that was the one area that I have been learning as I'm going along. Luckily for me, in my particular case, I had an inbuilt network, both personally and professionally. So that kind of propelled me, because you always need that little bit of a push at the start. But the sales aspect and the soft skills aspect is something that I'm learning on and I've improved on. But what really helped me growing up is because my family was involved in this sort of business, so, and other businesses as well. So dealing with employees and all of that sort of stuff was something that I had both experienced personally and done myself. So some of those things were there, but I needed to sharpen and become better at those. And I'm trying to do it.
Right, right. That's interesting. So you went out and you just said, hey, I'm going to buy multifamily. And then you selected a market and just started talking to brokers.
Yeah. And, you know, just to be clear, I also had partners, right? So it wasn't a one-man show. It was never a one-man show. But look, with regards to talking to brokers, yeah, that was very easy. Because I worked on the, again, on the institutional side, I worked with sales and trading guys. I was in investment banking. So talking with brokers, talking shop with brokers wasn't really that hard.
I gotcha. Okay, cool. So you guys went out and you started buying multifamily assets. And are you buying still to this day? Or
Yeah. We're actually putting a Class A asset. We put it under contract. We should close it in Orlando in the next, well, couple of weeks.
Class A. Okay. Let's hear why you're buying Class A today then.
Well, look, I got a good discount to market. It's in a very fantastic submarket for me. I always look at demographics first, like how strong the demographics are, because I've done a couple of workforce housing deals, but obviously I didn't necessarily want to do those long-term. I understand what the marketing and hype is. That's just not a business model that I'm necessarily, look, I'm not saying I'd never do it, but because I have, but that's just not a business model that I wanted to be in. Class A, this deal particularly is in a very strong submarket, high rent growth, all of that stuff. But basically there's just a lot of meat on the bone and I'm basically acquiring it off market. So kind of helps me. But again, these things take time, right? So those relationships over a period of time, your reputation in the market over a period of time, those things only take time. So this couldn't have happened maybe say a year and a half, maybe 2 years ago, or maybe 4 years ago.
Interesting.
Because you build up to it, right? My point is you build up to a certain relationship, certain reputation in the market.
Right. Yeah. So you guys are buying a Class A asset. I mean, is this what I typically understand when people are acquiring Class A assets is that really you're just buying the income stream. I mean, there's not really a lot.
I think that's a big misconception.
Yeah, which is why I'm asking for you to clarify.
It's a big misconception amongst people because look, you can make money on an income stream or appreciation depending on what price you buy something at. Because people just make these sweeping statements about workforce is this, Class A is this, Class B is this. Well, at the end of the day, all of this basically boils down to what price do you get it at and what is or not the upside potential. Basically, that's what it boils down to, because all theories are great on paper. Reality is kind of different, right? So because we were getting it to a discounted price, there's a lot of meat on the bone. That's why it's good. But look, tomorrow, if I see a Class C asset in one of the submarkets and I'm active in, and I don't know how in this market I'm going to get it at a massive discount, but if I do magically get it at a massive discount, yeah, I mean, I'm not going to overlook it just because it's Class C. Because for me, what matters is how much money we can make, not what the picture on the property looks like, right?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I think your point there is valid. You know, it's what you pay for it that matters.
Yeah, essentially. And what the opportunity is like, does it match with what you want to do and what your business plan is or what your capabilities are?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So I guess, why is the seller selling it then? Like if they're...
Oh, dude, they really short themselves in the foot. So a couple of reasons. Surprise, surprise. The guy decided to, his father is really rich. He's not the sharpest tool in the tool shed. His wife basically has no background in property management, but the guy put her in charge of property management. She also takes care of their four kids, which under the age of 10, I got two kids under the age of 10. And if either of those kids are around, there is no freaking way I'm getting anything done. Okay. And then the kicker is they had a loan coming due in July, which till as of mid-April, they had conveniently forgotten about. Now, I don't know how you do that. I have no freaking idea how this thing even happens in reality. Like, how could you be this dumb? But God bless this person. And I really hope he continues being dumb because I want to buy more of his assets.
Right, right. Yeah, keep doing what you're doing because I'll just keep buying is what you're saying.
I mean, look, man, his dad is rich. So like I tell everybody, my partner was like, well, how could he forget about his loan? I was like, well, why shouldn't he forget about his loan when his dad's worth a couple of $100 million?
Right, right.
Well, shit, I'd forget about it. You give me $500 million, I'll forget about a lot of things.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's a good point. That's a good point because it when there's no pain.
Yeah.
When there's no pain and there's no motivation or incentive, it's just kind of like, oh yeah, I guess that is coming due in July.
Whatever. That you shrug your shoulder. Yeah, whatever.
Wow. Okay. That's fantastic. What year was it built?
2017.
That's fantastic. Awesome. Good for you. Good for you. So what have been some of the keys that you would say have really helped you propel yourself forward?
Well, look, the key, I think the biggest key is just consistency more than anything else, because I see a lot of people, a lot of times they, and I had to also learn this, by the way, right? It's not like I just knew this from the word go. And again, there's one thing to know and there's one thing to do, right? Because the doing is the hard, the knowing is not that hard, right? So consistency, repeatedly doing the fundamentals over and over again. And the fundamentals aren't just, say, analyzing deals. The fundamentals are reaching out to your investors on a timely basis, right? So every 2 weeks, 1 week, whatever, 1 month, whatever your thing is, but frequent. So they get trained to hear from you, talking to brokers, equity providers in the market, having those relationships, but making those calls every week. It's like a salesperson, right? A salesperson, most institutional salespeople and other salespeople also, they have a quota, right? I got to make X amount of calls and I got to do X, Y, Z. And then I put them in like a board or whatever everybody calls. And I got to move my prospect all the way from start all the way to the end. It's kind of like a sales process, regardless of what you're doing. Even if you're underwriting a deal, it is like a sales process. You start at the start, you have an end, and you got to move it through the various stages. Yes or no, whether you do a deal or you don't do a deal, that's immaterial. So understanding that everything is kind of like a sales process or can be broken down that way, and then consistently doing it, right? Because the consistently doing it part is the hard part.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You said it. The consistency is the hard part. If you could rewind the tape a little bit, what are some things that maybe missteps along the way that you would do differently?
I mean, if I knew where the market was going, man, I would have like overpaid for everything 3 years ago, 5 years ago. I'd still make a lot of money. And I would not have had to torture myself to death every step of the way, basically.
Right, right. Yeah.
But if I knew that, oh yeah. I mean, because the last 2 years, being responsible has not paid off. Being irresponsible has paid off.
Isn't that sad? But it's true.
Well, I mean, it's reality. So whatever. I mean, if you're saying if I could go back in time and knowing what I know now, yeah, I'd be completely irresponsible.
Right.
But I don't have a time machine, sadly. So I have to be responsible going forward.
Right, right. What about some things? You know, obviously, we all wish for the crystal ball, which, you know, no one is working. So. Or no one's crystal ball is working. So what are some things maybe that if you look back, you said, hey, man, if I had done this sooner or if I'd made this course correction earlier on, I might be in a maybe different even position than you are now. Anything else that comes to mind?
I don't know, man. Being born in the U.S. would have really freaking helped me. I can tell you that because it's really funny. I hear the discourse from a lot of people, doom and gloom and all that stuff, right? I'm like, man, y'all have no freaking idea, man, how bad it is in the rest of the world. So every time somebody tells me, oh, it seems like the U.S. is turning into a third world country, I was like, man, first of all, you need to step out of your state, sunshine. Okay, nothing's happening. It's a fantastic country. And you all should thank your lucky stars you're born in this country.
Right.
Okay? So if you don't do that, I mean, you got to cut the crap, shut up, just get back to working and making a lot of money. Okay? And look, we're in a very privileged position if you think about it. Again, nobody's developing Facebook. So let's just be honest. Real estate, I mean, you got to use your brain, but you don't have to be the most intelligent person in the neighborhood or the city.
Right.
Right. I mean, it's not like Mark Zuckerberg making Facebook or Steve Jobs making Apple.
Right.
I mean, you can learn these skills and it's a pretty good livelihood if you think about it long term. Right. So we're lucky enough to do something that is good materially, strictly speaking. Right. It's a good lifestyle option. I mean, man, don't bitch about it. Just shut up and do the work.
I love it. I love it. You get right down to business and just tell it like it is. So talk to us about some other investments that you guys have. I know we talked early on the show about QSRs. Looks like you said you have investments in consumer goods and health and fitness.
Yeah. So basically in that regard, I have a buddy out in Toronto because I moved from Toronto. He runs a fitness equipment wholesale plus he's in consumer as well. He buys wholesale, but he has a consumer front. And what we started seeing around the time when coronavirus started happening, especially in Canada and over here as well to a certain degree, lockdown started happening. So a lot of the brick and mortar kind of shut down or was reduced. Then you had supply chain issues because now, you know, most of the stuff is produced in China. Most consumer goods are produced in China, like mass market consumer goods, right? So they had supply chain issues. So we were able to basically focus on this business, which is fitness equipment. And the margins are fantastic in this business. I mean, sometimes it's between 30 to 50% after all our costs, right? Net margins. So we had good relationships. We just doubled and tripled down on that and basically just had a lot of inventory, built our social media marketing around it. And we specifically wanted to cater to consumers. We did not want to have a brick and mortar type setup because that just introduces a lot of fixed costs into your business, right? And that's just been phenomenal for us. I mean, again, going back, if I knew this a year ago, we would have probably dumped 5 times the amount of money. We would have taken so many loans. We would be up to our eyeballs in loans and taken that money and done this. So that's the big one. There's a couple of venture investments, but that's not just me. That's me investing in other people's businesses. So that kind of gives you an idea. And we're always looking for more businesses or more opportunities to invest in, either actively, like us doing it, developing a team, or look, if we like somebody, then, you know, investing into their deal.
Right.
And riding their coattails, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You don't always have to be the active investor if somebody has a good idea.
Yeah. And to be honest with you, lots of good ideas. Frankly, even if you told me the good idea, I still wouldn't know what to do with it.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Talk to us about funding your deals. Since we're on the topic of financing and funding, like what was it like once you left the institutional side and getting your deals funded?
Well, from an equity point of view or debt point of view? Because debt is pretty easy to get. Yeah. Debt is pretty easy to get. Equity point of view, look, the first few deals suck. And again, the consistency part comes in. It's really funny. Like we're doing this deal right now. And for each deal, after every deal, I would do a post-mortem, right? And I would see, okay, what did I do well? What did I didn't do well? Who responded? Who didn't respond? Or if somebody responded, they kind of tagged me along, but never really invested in the deal. Well, if they've done it 3 times, they're kind of out, or 2 times, they're out sort of deal, right? And what's funny is with each deal that we do, the capacity just keeps increasing. So in that regard, I think what helped me was starting out, I had a background in finance and private equity investment banking. I had that network professional built in. It was hard to tap that network. But again, there was some level of relationships built in. But that was a very small sliver compared to what we are right now. And again, I think the thing is that when you do deals, it's just one of those things where, like my investors, I don't do a lot of or any outbound sort of marketing, right? So most of the people that come to me are people who've either heard about me through, I don't know, my other investors, or they were investors in previous deals and now they just want to double and triple down on their next investment. So, but it's just a factor of being aware about what's going on, analyzing what you're doing right or wrong, but then just doing more and more quality deals along the way. The more happy people they have, the more they tell people, and the more they also want to give you over a period of time.
Right, right. I think I liked what you said there, where you said that the first few deals suck.
Oh my God, you have no idea. I was stressing about certain things or certain dollar amounts that right now somebody says that, I'd be like, yeah, okay, don't worry about it, man. I think you need the money more than I do.
Right. Yeah, no, that's fantastic. And it is, and I think it, to a point, I mean, obviously you have to have the network, but to a point, it's true. Not that if you find a deal, good money will show or money will.
Oh man, I don't believe in that baloney because some like guru sometime was saying that. I was like, sure, man, I have a $100 million deal I can find pretty easy. You got $90 million cash, let's go. Because if you don't, then I mean, this is just baloney, right? Because you could have the greatest deal in the world. Where are you going to go find the cash, man?
But I do think it's true. Oh, but that people need what you are presenting.
Oh, yeah. Look, that's understood. If somebody doesn't even want to invest in real estate for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you could have the greatest deal in the world. Nobody, you know, if your recipient doesn't want to do it, like, why would you even talk to them about it?
Right, right. But I think that's a common fear amongst people who are raising money is that, like, will people want to invest? And in the end, I think there is that if you're presenting a good deal, that people need that deal more than you need those people's money.
It helps. Don't get me wrong. It helps. But it's one of those chicken and egg things, man. I mean, just merely having a good deal doesn't always cut it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, this has been great, Omar. I do appreciate it. Let's jump here into the final four. The first question is this. What is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
Consistency. Like I told you earlier, man. Like even if you don't do any, regardless, just pick one or two things and just do it consistently.
Right. Right. I love that. When it comes to investing in yourself, what is one thing you're doing to stay on top of your game?
Well, I try to basically stay out of the whole mentorship sort of game that a lot of people are into. And I try to read. Reading has always been a passion of mine, right? So I always read. And it's not just real estate. I just try to read generally about things that I like or I'm interested in, because I feel the more mental models you have in your life, the more reference points you have a richer, wider perspective when you look at things.
Right. No, that's great. When it comes to investing in the world, what is one way you're making the world a better place?
I mean, look, we're very charitable, but I don't know if I'm directly making the world a better place because I'm just giving money, right?
Sure.
So that's something that I have to work on to really figure out what is the best way of me, or what is the best way for me to leverage myself, apart from just writing a check.
Right. No, absolutely. Absolutely. No, that's great. Appreciate that. Omar, if listeners want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
You can go to our website, right on the front page, around middle right. You'll have a little box that says name, email address, and how you found out about us. Click on it. You'll get an email to verify your email address. You can also email me, Omar, O-M-A-R, at boardwalkwealth, boardwalkwealth.com. And I'm sure you can put that in the show notes as well.
Yep. It absolutely will be. Omar, thanks so much for your time today. I do appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. Have a good one. Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.